Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
I'm Johnny Smith.
I'm Richard Porter.
And this is Smith & Sniff, a podcast in which two friends talk about cars and many other things. This ain't Texas. There isn't any hold them. Lay your cards down, 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 down. Simply park your Lexus and throw your keys up. Now, I think this is a terrible idea, Richard.
Which bit?
I'd got no problem about parking a Lexus. I mean, to be honest, most of them have got that self-parking thing, which a function that nobody ever uses. In fact, I think Lexus was the first car I ever tested, which had that thing, parking assist, where you drive past a gap and it says, you're big enough, you can go in there.
Yeah, me too.
And then the steering wheel starts ships wheeling its way in. But no bastard ever uses one on a daily basis. Like, does anybody use the function? Anybody in the world?
No, and I remember trying it out on that LS, and one of the things that immediately is striking about it is that it's really slow.
Yes.
It errs on the side of caution to the point of being too slow. And on a real city street, you'd just be getting in people's way.
Oh, you'd have a face full of wheel brace from a white van man.
Yeah.
Within seconds. You'd be sat there and the car would be wheeling itself away very slowly. He'd come up and pull you out the car and give you a good hiding.
I do remember that the first time I tried it out on a real street, it was at night, and between the reversing lights and then I suppose the brake lights were on, or maybe just the tail lights, and the exhaust vapour.
Ah, yes.
I was looking at the camera, you know, the screen in the middle showing the camera, which at that point also they were a bit of a novelty still. And this, you know, so it looked like dry ice floating across different coloured lights. And it looked a little bit like a scene from 1980s Top of the Pops.
Or Blade Runner.
Which I quite liked. And I had plenty of time to admire it because it took forever to get into space. But I remember thinking, I'm waiting for Bonnie Tyler to walk into shot and start growling.
It's Cold Start Blade Runner, that well-known film where everyone's just on choke and nobody lets their car warm up. So Beyoncé.
You're quoting Beyoncé because she's that recent single of hers. I was listening to that new album the other day.
Oh, really?
Of hers, and it sort of billed as this is her country album.
Mm.
And I secretly really like country music. To my wife's despair,
I really like country music. I just never talk about it. I'm not sure I've made it a secret. I mean, like all music, there's good stuff and there's cack. But
I know. It's a bit like going, oh, I like rock music, and then just you can be discriminating within that. But I think some people don't like country as a genre. My wife being one of them, I think it reminds her of
American people,
people in vests and pickup trucks from her homeland who have guns, and it puts her off.
No, I actually quite like. I do quite like.
Country music tells good stories sometimes, doesn't it? And I love that kind of vocal style and those melodies, which you hear early Taylor Swift has. And I think sometimes even now in her sort of, now she's queen of all pop, sometimes you still hear a bit of a country melody in some of her stuff.
Yes.
And that's a good thing.
I think there's a consistent mention of heavy plant and agricultural machinery in country music, which I dig. I just fundamentally, I don't know why, I go, that's cool. Hard day's work on the machines, stop for a good lunch. Maybe your wife's left you, maybe she hasn't.
That's the thing. I mean, rock music, pop music, soul music, whatever you're into. But I think only country, there's a good chance you might get a reference to a lumber yard or some kind of railway shunting yard or something. Yards, generally, big in country.
Or boot space.
And tasks.
Just general boot space.
Yeah.
Or, pickup truck capacity. that you'd get a pretty solid idea of what your vehicle could carry through the lyrics. Yeah. Wouldn't you?
Yes. Maximum towing weights might rear their head at some point in a Toby Keith song. You just don't know. And also, not just pickup trucks, but pickup trucks quite regularly leaving interstates, not to junction, causing life-changing injuries, which are then the root cause of your wife and dog leaving you.
Of course. I thought you meant that's the preserve of the Mustang driver would be sort of getting...
Well, now... Here's the opportunity for us to sort of create our own subgenre of music. I think Mustang Country.
Oh, wow.
Wistful songs entirely about losing control of a rear-wheel drive Ford outside a coffee shop or a lumberyard.
I'd actually really like to listen to that. If it was carefully done. It was the early hours.
Lots of references to Peterbilt's dropping diesel.
Oh yeah,
on a wet interstate.
You'd pulled over to a motel just to get a nice black coffee to continue your mission into the night. And what happens? Oh gosh,
you're on the hunt for the guy who killed your brother.
Yeah,
and when your eyes were tired, you pulled in, got a coffee, and then you just weren't concentrating. There was some drop diesel.
Yeah.
And whoop, it came around.
You told the
It
old,
came around is quite a good, it came good name around. For a country song about losing control of your Mustang. It came around.
And the problem was, it came around on you. I had a very large measure of black coffee between my legs. And naturally, I was driving the car one-handed, so when the car did come around rather quickly, I was never going to be able to gather it up in time. So
it came around, my thighs are burning. This stuff writes itself.
Yeah, and the old man at the fuel station, I should never have told him to pump the tyres up because he's put them up to 70 psi. Because his eyesight is failing him.
I think under country rules, the old man at the gas station... He should have sadness in his eyes, or maybe just glaucoma. Either way, he wasn't reading the pressures properly and overinflated like crazy.
Yeah.
Good. Well, there we go.
But as he was filling the car up, he was also just drizzling the fuel all down the side.
Yes, premium gasoline all over my offside rear.
Well, I'm glad we've got into the country group because of course... Beyonce's controversially gone into the country realm, she's done it with a Japanese car as well.
Yeah, I've only listened to that album once, but my two beefs with it are: firstly, it's not country enough for me.
Yeah,
that single is probably the most country thing on it, in that sort of British person's perception of country.
Was there a hidden track at the end about an SC430?
It's a damning indictment of the original IS200 and its lack of torque.
Yeah.
But, what did she expect from a 2-litre, even if it was a straight six?
I think if we want to get really scientific and about her lyrics, so parking your Lexus up, woo, great idea. Park the car up, go to the bar. But don't throw your keys up.
No.
Don't do that because... straight after that, she's asking you to stick around and have a slow dance and pour some sugar on me and have a real life boogie. Now, and a hoedown. That all sounds possibly brilliant.
Yeah.
But imagine if you do all that knowing full well you can't fully relax because you fuzzed your keys into the air and you just don't know where they are. And you're like, oh gosh, I'll look later.
Yeah, she's going to all these things. Hey, so, take your shoes off. Let's have a hoedown. Blah, 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 pour some sugar on. It's all going to be great. And you go, no, Beyonce, I've now got to go to a Lexus dealership and get a replacement key.
Yeah.
Because after you encouraged me to throw it in the air, it fell to the ground and broke, and now the keyless entry doesn't work. So,
well, somebody in really sharp heels has bloody line danced over the transponder.
Yeah.
It's never going to unlock again. Well, unless you believe American films where nobody actually locks their cars. So it'll be unlocked so you can sleep in it in the car park and then the next morning you can sort the problem out. That's what I would do.
I mean, that's not strictly true. People in American films do sometimes lock their cars, but when they do, they go bip, bip, in a way that real cars haven't done for about 40 years.
Yeah. Do you know, my Boxster started doing that.
What?
Yeah, it did it. It's done it the last two nights.
Oh.
The Ghetto Boxster. When you lock it, let me get this right, when you lock it, I know. When you lock it, it flashes the lights. When you unlock it, it bips the horn twice. And I don't know whether it's to say, I've been broken into, I'm not happy, whatever. Yeah. But it does do it.
Oh, because sometimes those bipperies, they're coded, aren't they? It's trying to tell you something.
No, exactly.
Your box has gone into lassie mode.
Yeah, it has.
Your key battery's running out, Johnny. Johnny, your key battery's Johnny! It's desperately trying to tell you and you don't realise, but... You can make, you can set lock sounds on my 24 Tesla.
And of course,
one of them
you can.
Is the bip bip from a movie car, but obviously that's done very tongue in cheek. I haven't set that one. I think it's a bit much.
I think
it's late at night or something. But
I bet
I'm actually. You know, last week I was talking about that DS4, and that's one of the things that does. That has a sort of. It has walk away locking
with the Chat Grand Prix built into it.
Yeah,
yeah.
I forgot to mention last week that the DS4 is not a very good car.
Oh, you didn't mention that. No,
I didn't. Well, I was too busy banging on about Chat Grand Prix T, but yeah, I just found it a bit annoying. It's all right. I just can't think of a single reason why you'd recommend it, and there are actually a few things wrong with it. Including the fact that it, and this is not unique to that car, because I think it's a Stellantis thing now. When you walk away, rather than it going, it just goes bip bip in a slightly pathetic way, and you just go, I'd give me a button on the outside to press to lock it. I'm happy with that as a keyless answer, rather than walk away.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Then it makes a strident sound. But I didn't look into whether you can change it. So in fairness, maybe there's an option to make it do something less irritating, but. The keyless thing, when you walk up, the handles are supposed to pop out automatically, and sometimes they don't, and it's slightly frustrating.
I forgot to say to you, when you borrowed the ID Buzz the other day, and it's not just a Buzz thing, it's an ID thing, I believe. Mm. When you turn the car off, or your bum comes off the seat and it senses that no one's in it, it does the...
Yes.
Da, 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 dun, dun.
Yes.
And... It to me, it sounds like the end of Teenage Mutant Hero Turtles theme music. Right at the end, heroes in a half shell. Dun, 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 dun. Yeah,
I know what you mean.
It really
it's a
does.
Bit annoying, that isn't it? I don't like it. That buzz jingle. There's no need for it.
No, I mean it's not as bad as the creepy funfair from the Fiat 500e. That really is sort of Stephen King levels of just shiver down the spine. I don't like it at all. But
and don't. Kias play little jingles on startup and shutdown, but sometimes they're playing while you've got the radio or your music on, so you get this horrible clash between two bits of music in different keys.
Kia and Hyundai have got that lovely optional, you can put relaxation music on, which I got totally lost on a journey a few months back.
Did you?
Yeah, I was bored of all the radio stations and it was quite late at night. And I suddenly went, oh, yeah, you can go through your relaxation music or your wildlife sounds or whatever it's called. And I started putting on a thunderstorm in a rainforest or something and realised that I'd been listening to it for an hour and a half. I just got lost in it. It was actually really good. And at first I thought it was gimmicky and in the real world you'd never really use it if you own the car. But I actually think you would. Maybe listeners who have... a Kia Hyundai can relate. But I think it's actually quite cool. Something I thought was going to be shit, but it isn't.
It had a bit of running water in it.
Yes.
And I just thought, that's going to make me need a wee.
That's a road piss all day.
Somewhere up the M6.
There is a trickle on there.
Talking of backrests to last week, we had that fantastic message from a listener called Robin, who's a game designer, saying how, you know, the standards in mobile gaming now are so high because they have to grab people's attention very quickly and everything has to be very, very simple to use, and car manufacturers' UI could learn a few tricks from them.
Damn right.
We had subsequently had a message from another listener who I won't name, but who works in building navigation systems for cars, but... as a supplier,
okay.
Working with other suppliers to feed into original manufacturers. He's agreeing with what Robin says, that everything in the auto industry, as we might have guessed, is costed down, and it's shocking, apparently. Automotive-grade hardware running many infotainment systems wouldn't be out of place in a five-year-old low-end Android phone. Now, that's because it needs to be rigorously tested to survive the lifetime of the car, but also because car companies are cutting pennies from everywhere possible, and invisible compromises often lose out. He cites, again, I won't dob him in it by naming companies, but there's a specific car that he's aware of that uses a massive touchscreen, but behind the scenes, it's powered by the hardware from a much older model with a tiny screen. And so he says, for example, when the first finished system was tested, it took over a minute to render a navigation route that would take you 5 seconds online.
Oh, that's unacceptable. That's screen smashing.
It's completely unacceptable, but it's because they try to save money by using a cheapo processor on a much bigger screen. So he says the tier one suppliers have a massive influence over the OEMs because they bring together the chaotic Franken systems that are developed by dozens of different tier twos. Where the sort of trad car manufacturers are desperate to claw this expertise back in-house.
Yeah.
But due to entrenched bloat and bureaucracy, that it's not going very well. And this is why he says the Chinese brands are
smashing
so good at it. Because they don't use suppliers. They develop the UIs themselves with talent and expertise from the mobile industry.
Yeah. Which totally makes sense.
Totally makes sense, yeah.
I feel like it's drowning manufacturers and sort of creating fog across their vision when they should be focusing on more of the other car bits.
You sort of realise how simple things were relatively in the old days,
yeah.
Because they could just sort of focus on trying to make the engine a bit better.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which I'm sure in itself comes with myriad challenges, but, you know, it feels like it wasn't quite as fiddly and as prone to getting complaints as a screen that's all wonky and doesn't work quickly enough.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, I just wanted to read that out just to say that it's very interesting. That's a sort of slightly different perspective from somebody who's close to the auto industry, but largely agreeing with Robin's message from last week. So thank you, mystery correspondent, for that.
Well, I wanted to, yeah, thank you. I wanted to talk about something which got me thinking, because we're sort of still in the Easter holidays-ish. Mm. Happy Easter, everyone. A bit belated, but, you know. Eggs out and all that. I've realised this. You know, you've got like the German car shows like Luftgekult and all that sort, or the Air Occult or whatever it's called. And lots of German words for German car shows like Air Cool Porsches and Cool Volkswagens, yeah. And stuff. You notice that that's not a thing with French cars. It's almost like it's not that cool to celebrate the Frenchness of French cars, I don't think. And yet here we are in a situation where it's almost universally accepted that France is a cool place to go on holiday or aspire to own a second home, and French culture and the language is beautiful. So French holidays are cool, and the language is cool, but sort of admitting to undying love for French cars is not so cool, whereas worshipping German cars and the Germanness of the car culture is cool, but no one ever says, I'm going to Germany on holiday.
That's true.
Don't they? Nobody.
And I gather, well, in fact, I've seen bits of Germany that are very beautiful. I've only ever been to Germany in our work trips, and I know you have as well. Mm. But if someone said, we're going on holiday to Germany this year, you'd think they're a bit peculiar. Because you'd go, what's wrong with France or Italy?
Yeah.
Or Spain? It's sort of accepted holiday. But why not go on holiday to Germany?
Completely.
It's beautiful. It's clean. I suppose it's, you know, no one goes, oh, they've opened a German restaurant in town. I can't wait to go and try the food. But if it was a French restaurant, you'd be like, oh, fantastic. I hope they do coq au vin the proper traditional way and all that. And it's just, yes.
It's so true.
It's
so true, isn't it? And Germany is beautiful, and it is fascinating, and I do. I've been to it many, many times.
Well, I suppose that's. I remember years ago reading an interview with Chris Lowe out of the Pet Shop Boys, And him saying that often when they were interviewed in Germany, interviewers would say, now, please tell us, why can Germany not make good pop music like England can? And he would say, don't worry about it. You make great cars. So it's almost like everywhere needs to sort of play to its strengths a bit, and everyone, but perhaps that's unfair, and we perceive a nation's strengths unfairly and disregard things they could actually be good at.
Yeah.
But what you're really saying is there should be a French car show like Luftgekühlt.
Yeah.
That leans into Frenchness.
I do think so, because I know that the whole 9/11 thing has become bigger than ever. And there's so many subcultures of resto modding and safari. And, well, we only need to go to look at the Rens Bolts show that we went to last year. Absolutely huge. But there isn't that there isn't that with French. Or if there was, it would be frowned upon, because you'd have all the cliches coming out like, not very. Because my dad brought this up a couple of days ago. I had Easter lunch with my mum and dad after staying up for 37 hours on the Land's End trial. And my dad kind of said it like, yeah, it's funny, isn't it, how the German engineering and stuff is regarded as being the best, uncompromising, always good. But yet in recent time, and a lot of car YouTubers have picked up on this, ones that are hands-on with engine stuff, they've noticed how badly the reliability for some VAG stuff and BMWs in particular has just nosedived.
Oh, God, yeah.
Nosedived. Yeah, just like big ancillary parts made of clattery, horrible plastic, and they shat themselves and the engine just inhales parts and dies. So actually the whole German no-compromise engineering is sort of the thing of the past, which is a shame to admit. Yeah. But
I think it's totally based on work they did 40 or 50 years ago, and that reputation has carried a lot of companies and isn't actually an accurate reflection of where they are now.
Yeah.
But the perception is still there. Again, we're back to perception, aren't we? Like, a perception that Germany wouldn't be a nice place to go on a holiday. The perception that, German car must be reliable. Audi, they make good cars.
Yeah.
And they're very good at enhancing that perception by making the cars feel solid.
Yes,
bits of the engine are, in fact, made of tic-tac boxes, but
hidden.
The doors thunk closed and the dashboard feels very high quality. So,
whereas the French, they don't try and hide that. They go, look, it is what it is.
Look at the Peugeot 504.
Yeah.
Probably hadn't got the highest interior quality of its age, but mobilised huge swathes of North Africa and seemed to be pretty unstoppable. As unstoppable as the Mercedes W123, which is another car that sort of kept an awful lot of the world moving.
Yeah.
But it's always praised for its solidity and its longevity.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think, though, the trouble is with the French car show, you're right, it risks sort of slipping into cliche. You know, you go to a German car show, and I'm not sure, certainly when we went to Rennsport, there weren't Umpar bands and Curryverse stands everywhere.
No, there were.
At all, because that would be a bit cliche. But I feel like, you do a French car show, and the temptation for there to be like 20 fucking H vans serving baguettes and snails and things would be a little bit too much. You'd go, oh dear, why is everyone wearing stripy jerseys and berets and going, oi, oi? It's like, oh, come on, people.
Well, you know what? This brings me on to my next question. Acceptable accordions. you see, I know we've touched on this in the past. Okay.
Have we?
We've touched on the fact that in the past, you could always tell a foreign dance music hit because it has some accordion in it. And in the UK, that wouldn't be accepted. You'd be like, no, you can't have a dance hit with accordion in it. That's just not right. Whereas in Spain or France or somewhere else in Europe, they go, yeah, it's cool. Wouldn't even question it. It's full of Mardi Gras vibes. That's great.
Yeah.
Whereas over here we go, no, it's got an accordion in it, mate. That's like maypole dancing off of the 70s.
Yeah, what are you playing there? Well, I suppose that's it, isn't it? The way that we approach the accordion is sort of more
diabolical.
Fits into a... I was going to say a kind of folk music tradition, but yes, you may say that. I'm trying to think what's hits with accordions on.
There's a lot of dance, accordion based Euro dance.
What's that one? Is that
the Lambada? Is that Lambada?
Is it? Anyway, that one.
Yeah, that's the Lambada. And they just did another dance version of it, of course. It's probably about 7,000 dance versions of it. And then they did the and they used that for like one of the Euro football competitions. And whenever there was like a montage of slow motion, like sliding tackles and stuff, there'd always be high energy accordion dance, which used to grind my teeth, frankly. I'm not sure I could be in a street party situation. And if there's a load of like high energy accordions, I might have to bow out and go and find the margaritas. And
how would you feel if Beyonce announced that her next album was entirely accordion based? And she's also going to, this time she's grinding Mercedes with ladies.
I'm going to say something unpopular now.
Go on.
I think Beyonce is a phenomenal singer, but there's not many Beyonce songs I really, really like.
Oh.
So I very rarely actively listen to Beyonce's songs. She very much lost me at To the Left, To the Left. Because
she was directing you through Royal France.
I was being far too literal. It's like everything that you own in a box left. I can't fit it all in a box on the left. I'd need a skip or a shipping container.
Is that, in fairness, you are a bit of a hoarder.
I am a bit of a hoarder.
Beyonce's coming round to yours, like she's decided to do a full Marie Kondo thing, and she's come round to your house and she's going, right, to the left. Everything you own in a box to the left. You're like, but what? I've got a bumper from an Austin Princess here. That's not going to fit in the fucking box for a start.
No, and why so specific, Beyonce? You must not know about me. You must not know about me. I can have another year.
Well, that's your response, isn't it?
that's what I say.
Now, listen, Beyonce, you must not know about me. I've got wheel trims for cars I haven't owned for 30 years, so... you can get that box and chuck it away straight.
Always think that the way you would say you must not know about me is almost a little bit nasal like Michael Caine. I think that would work really well.
You must
not know.
Not know about me.
Listen, you must not know about me. You must not know about me. I could have another you in a minute. In fact, she'll be here in a minute.
So anyway, we've started talking about the Beyonce's recent song where she rhymes Texas and Lexus. Ooh. But did it not strike you that really she's gone, oh, I'm doing a country album, I better mention Texas. It's also where she's from, obviously. And so it's important to get it in there. And she's like, oh, shit, what rhymes with Texas? And there's not a lot of stuff actually rhymes with Texas. So when she got to Lexus, she was like, right,
brilliant,
having it.
Brilliant. Yeah, solar plexus. Can't think of anything else.
It's a thing. That's why
if you said infectious really quickly, might work.
Yeah, that'd do it.
Texas
I'm
infectious.
From Texas and I'm infectious.
Yeah, or this tune's infectious, or your love is infectious. See, I could have been a songwriter, Rich. Maybe I could write some stuff for Beyonce and she'd lap it up.
Yeah, I'd love to do that. I'd love to be like, you know, like Kathy Dennis. You know, she had a pop career, but then she went, can't be bothered.
I'm better behind the curtain.
Yeah, don't want to keep having to gyrate around on top of the pops wearing some luminous orange leggings. And
well, you
paired with a jacket.
Well, you're like the Kathy Dennis of the Grand Tour.
In what sense? That I'm from Norwich and I have very orange hair in the 90s.
No, you twat. It's you've scripted, you know, dozens of Top Gear and Grand Tour based material behind the stage curtain.
Right. But of course, sorry, when you said that, I thought you meant that I used to date that Super Vet guy and then I wrote the song Toxic about him, which I gave to Britney Spears.
Did she date the Super Vet?
It's alleged that she... Well, I think it's a known fact she went out with that Super Vet guy. I can't remember his
Irish
name.
Irish guy?
Yeah.
What, she wrote Toxic about a really successful vet?
Well, yes, it doesn't contain the lyrics. You broke my heart, but you fixed my cart.
Oh, God.
It doesn't work.
No,
she dated him, and she also wrote the song Toxic for Britney Spears.
Yeah.
And it's alleged that it was about someone she'd previously dated, so people have claimed it must be the super vet. I don't think she's ever confirmed that or denied it. Could be all bollocks.
So she keeps.
She definitely did write Toxic.
She keeps all her inspiration close to her chest. Do you do this with some of your finest hours of script writing?
I mean, there's not much call to sort of dredge up previous heartbreaks whilst writing, you know, a track test of the new BMW M2 or something.
I think you should. I think that's where you're going wrong.
And, and emailing Jeremy and him going, oh.
I think that's what you should do.
A lot of stuff about...
You should have convinced the people, the powers that be at Grand Tour, that they needed some high-energy accordion dance music just for some slow-motion skids and... You know, V-maxing on the speedo.
They're editing together the last Grand Tour as we speak. I could suggest it, I suppose. If just leaning over the editor's shoulder, going, "You know what you want on that bit? More accordion, mate."
I'd love that. I'd love that very much. Needs more accordion.
Needs more accordion. Are you sure?
Yeah, yes. Absolutely positive, mate. Positive. I wouldn't say it if I didn't mean it.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
You know, every week we upload the podcast as audio only to YouTube, and a few people like to listen on there for some reason. And we never really acknowledge that there's... you know, people leave comments. Sometimes the comments they're really good. So I just want to dive into the YouTube comments from last week, just for a couple of things. One of them
How many Eagle Quests were there?
No Eagle Quest. Now, I sent you that thing from last week that someone suddenly left us a review that just said Nissan Cube. For reasons I don't know, but I appreciated the break from Eagle Quest. Somebody else pointed out they work in the Alan Garithm world.
Oh.
And they said that if people keep leaving reviews that just say Eagle Quest with 5 stars, the Alan Garithm police will perceive this as some kind of attempt to game the system.
Oh, no.
And probably delete all the reviews and take away our star rating. So,
oh, shit.
I think we have to officially say, please stop leaving the review Eagle Quest for our thing.
Okay.
Or Nissan Cube. Don't start that either, because I think that, again, I think that might queer the pitch a little bit.
Could we say to our listeners, though, we really encourage you to leave a comment and a star rating, but can you actually write a cohesive sentence?
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. No F's and C's.
I looked at the reviews the other day to see how many Eagle Quests there were, and the answer is 100. Somebody had then left a very thoughtful review saying that they enjoyed listening with their wife on long road trips. And I was like, oh, that's really sweet. And it was, but it was mainly some just a blessed relief from everybody saying Eagle Quest. Anyway, YouTube comments. No Eagle Quests that I can see last week.
Oh, thanks.
A couple of people in quick succession, Thomas Jones and then someone calling themselves Lucian, both pointed out that Furio, which we mentioned as a budget tyre name.
Oh, yeah.
Furio was Tony Soprano's Italian bodyguard in The Sopranos, out of Off the TV.
Oh, so you were right. You were absolutely right.
Well, I thought it sounded like a Guy Ritchie henchman, but yeah, that's probably what it was in the back of my mind. It was maybe I was thinking of that. I realised as well, we forgot to say that Furio was, I think, a Citroën ZX trim level at one point.
Furio, I think it was.
It was like mildly sporty, not the full Volcan, but it was a sort of warm version.
I got overtaken by a Volcan on the motorway about a month ago.
What?
And properly jumped out of my seat and went, I think that's a ZX Volcan or Volcan. I haven't seen one of those in years. And even text messaged a friend of mine from school who had one as his second car. And he was very proud of it, but it used to... Mm. I think it used a litre of oil per 100 miles. So it was a little on the thirsty side.
First, yeah, when you say a car's thirsty, though, there's one thing if it's thirsty for petrol.
Oh.
But thirsty for blood. Thirsty for oil.
It needs absolute blood.
Screen wash. It's very thirsty for that for some reason. Someone else on the YouTube comments, Mike Bull, just said, for God's sake, lads, just buy the damn Eagle Quest.
I think, we still haven't decided because this is a democracy between Smith and Sniff. And we haven't, I think we're procrastinating a bit. I keep wanting to just do it. I've got the man, Ashley. I've got his text, his number. I did actually text him.
But did he ever tell you which band used it as a tour vehicle?
No, I was about to say that the last message I sent him was, could you... Hi, Ashley. Calling regarding the Senator Eagle Quest. Just wanted to know, as per my email, you said it was owned by a famous rock band. Who are they? Or who were they? Nothing. I heard absolutely nothing back at all. Which is sad, because I think he thinks that I'm a time waster, and if only he knew how little wasted time we've had over the Eagle Quest.
But then he should also realise perhaps that, you know, we've given his eBay listing an awful lot of publicity.
Oh, hell.
And yet it still hasn't sold, which brings us back to the point we made last week, that the only people who are interested in that car in the whole of Britain are you and me.
We are. Unless there's a wealthy Smith and Sniff sympathiser purchases it anonymously and then it just arrives. Sympathiser.
Well, a welcome dose of tough love, you might say, from a patron called Paul Harlick, who left a comment on the Patreon page that just said, what on earth are you going to do with that crap old senator, you dozy bastard?
Is that what he said?
Yeah,
that's the harsh voice of reason, isn't it?
Well, you know, and I can see Paul's point. Another listener, another patron called David Marden replied with, it'll be the official staff car of Smith and Sniff. All podcasts will be recorded in the back seat in the future.
Yeah.
They'll hire TV's Tiffany Dell or Plato or Harris or an ex-Stig to chauffeur them round.
Well, we could turn it into an acoustic temple back there. I had thought about, because there are a few listeners of this podcast who for some reason like this podcast and are working in the audio industry. And we could use them as consultants to say we need the acoustics to be good for a pod back there, but I don't want it to look like you've just filled it with landfill pillows, because that would look like someone
egg boxes.
Yeah, look like someone sleeping in it, and that would be sad. So
David Marden, our patron, has also said that buying the Eagle Quest isn't really about the money, is it? It's less than $3,000. I guess David's in the US or Canada, but yes, well, it's also about where to put it and things, but you claim to have cracked that.
In the words of King, it's about love and pride. I think that's why we'd be buying the Eagle. But by the way, I forgot to say, its official name is the Eagle Quest Statesman. I have failed to add the extra word in, but the badge on the back, it's the model is the Statesman, because they do an Eagle Quest hearse, which is called something else.
Okay.
So that, so really, the Stretch Saloon is called the Statesman. So
can I just change the subject, because I'm a bit worried that we're going to get complaints for talking about that fucking limo again for a week running whilst not buying it.
Maybe I'll buy it now.
I mean, to David's point about it's less than 3K, yeah, anyway. So I just want to read out another comment by a patron. Russ Clark was responding to our chat last week about the license to drive poster with the inexplicable British Leyland key on it.
Oh, yeah.
When the car is a Ferrari.
Yeah.
And now we are not the first people to spot this strange mistake on the poster.
Really?
Russ says, my family was on holiday in France when License to Drive was released. The holiday was not going well, and tempers were fraying, to say the least. On spotting the poster, my dad, who was at the limit of tolerance, could take no more, and on noticing the Ferrari and the incorrect key, announced to the entire packed shopping area that Ferraris are not made by British Leyland, for fuck's sake!
No way!
I remember the moment to this day, and every time I see a Ferrari, I think of the poster and my dad's outburst.
What? Which country? Was this in America?
No, he was on holiday in France.
Oh, in France. I wonder what make the holiday go so badly. I feel like I need to ask the question.
That's a good question. I don't know. I just assumed, you know, that... because that would have been 80s then, wouldn't it? So I'm going to say that...
What happened?
I'm going to guess they were staying at a low-quality, off-brand Eurocamp imitator.
Right.
And... forgive me, Russ, if none of this is even remotely correct. That the perhaps the Clark family, let's say Montego, suddenly a belt let go in the engine bay. And Father Clark was forced on a fruitless quest around Normandy to try and find a replacement that would fit. I don't know. Russ, if you're listening to this, please let us know what went so wrong on that holiday that caused your dad to absolutely lose his temper at a poster for a film.
Your dad's got eagle eyes, though, if you excuse the pun.
Yeah.
Eagle quest eyes.
It shows that, you know, there's nout new, because someone had clocked this years before we were tipped off about it. So, yeah, I thought that was quite interesting in a strange sort of way.
As usual, our listeners are way better than we are.
Always. Yeah. There's also quite a few people have sent in tyre names. Oh, I've just noticed a chap called VMAX is the one who he commented on the YouTube page. Whatever you'd call it. He's the one who said, as someone who works in the Allengorithm world, what you're asking for in the reviews with people commenting Eagle Quest and giving a 5-star review looks like an FRC, brackets, fake review campaign.
Oh, gosh.
I made up that abbreviation, but there's a good chance that all those reviews will be deleted.
Right, we need to hold this now.
Asked the followers to not be afraid to play some of their content playlists running overnight and let all the ads play through. The algorithm recognised this wasn't normal viewing pattern of the channel and got it demonetized.
Oh, gosh. Well... so can you edit your comments? Can you edit a feedback comment?
No, you could leave them for now. They seem to be still there.
Because you could leave Eagle Quest in there, but you just need to decorate it in amongst a paragraph of some sort, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, I know something I wanted to talk about back on the 1st of February, and I forgot to.
Yes.
So can I just revisit it? It's Donald Trump's Lamborghini Diablo that sold at auction. That well-known high-end auction in Scottsdale, Arizona, off of Barrett Jackson.
Yeah.
I always think Jackson Barrett sounds better, but it's not for me to make these decisions.
He could be one of our Mustang Country singers.
Oh, Jackson Barrett. Yeah, he's definitely, yeah. He's in a Fox Body 5.0, isn't he?
Yes. Oh, very much.
Yeah, he is.
White Cabrio.
With the bin liner Cabrio hood, yeah.
Yeah, it's what
just a white bag for life, isn't it?
It just looks like it's been nicked off a sunken cabin cruiser on the Thames.
Slightly algal. Yeah. So Trump's 1997 Diablo Roadster sold for $1.1 million.
Oh, did it?
Which was a world record for the Diablo. And I read this on a Haggerty blog. They said that in Haggerty number one, in other words, Concours condition, that car is worth $506,000. So it broke double what that car was actually worth. They only made 132 Diablo VT Roadsters, American-bound ones. And Trump's was in that nice special order blue. But the thing that really got me was this. There was a final bit of personalisation on Trump's car. There is a plaque, apparently, affixed to the door, which just says Donald Trump 1997 Diablo. That's all it says.
Right.
Which I just think, that just sounds a bit shit, doesn't it? I mean, he can't have put that there. He can't have asked to put, can I have my name, the year of the car and the model, please? Really?
Well, I mean, you may be underestimating the mindset of Donald Trump there, but I mean, he does put his name on all things that he owns, you know, buildings and stuff. So
I hope he did it with ticker tape. I would have liked it if he's got like a giant ticket assistant with a ticker tape that follows him everywhere.
You mean like Dymo tape?
Yeah, that stuff. So you could just show, okay, can you see, I'm pointing over there on that sofa. Can you just put on the back Donald Trump 2003 three-piece suite, please? Yeah, okay, I could do that. Yeah, do that and then come and follow me.
You start doing that. You could do, you know, Aston Martin used to, in fact, probably still do, let you personalise the kick plates on your car. So you can have your name on that. If you really want. Or you could have almost anything you want put on
that. What would you put on your kick plate of your Aston?
I don't know.
Come on.
I thought about on that side of things, and then on the passenger side, it could say on the other side of
things. That would be great. Actually, that's really good. On the other side of things.
A friend of mine who's a TV director is also friends with Jamie Oliver because they've worked together quite a lot. And he made a few quid and decided to treat himself to an Aston Martin, and then was talking to Jamie, and Jamie was like, oh, yeah, I'm going to buy one as well. So they went to the factory and they ordered their Astons together.
No, they didn't.
And when they got to the kick plate bit, I mean, now would you like to personalise the kick plates? You could put your name on them if you want. And Jamie Oliver went, oh, yeah, I'll do that. And my mate went, I don't think anyone cares about my name on the kick plates because, you know, presumably the idea is if you're a celebrity, you put your name on the kick plates, and then when you come to sell it, everybody knows it's your car and that's part of its provenance years down the line. But my mate was like, nobody gives a toss if I own this car. And actually, this guy is an incredibly accident-prone driver. And I think if I saw his name on the kick plates, I would actively look for a different Aston Martin.
Do you know if he's
scuffed?
Has he still got it?
No. He didn't have it for very long. He's a serial car
orderer.
What's the words? He just moves on cars quite quickly as a general rule. He gets bored.
You don't know if he scraped it or backed it into a fence or something.
I can't remember. I don't think, because he didn't have it that long. It certainly wasn't like
Did he have it for not very long because he made it unroadworthy very quickly?
Yeah, because it ended up the wrong way up or something. No, it wasn't. I can't remember which car it was, though. I think it was his. He had a Maserati Grand Cabrio that he managed to reverse into a neighbour's car coming out of his own drive.
Oh, my gosh.
Because his neighbour had parked across the street in a slightly different place to normal. He just backed into his car. And then I think that was the same car that he then reversed into a pillar in an underground car park. And when he got home, the damage was such he couldn't get the boot open. And then he realised that his bag with his laptop in it was in the boot. So he had to jemmy his own boot open with a crowbar.
No, he didn't. Really? Yes. Oh, my gosh. That's brilliant.
I cannot begin to tell you the number of incidents that this guy has had in various quite nice cars.
Oh my gosh. none of that happened in Donald Trump's Diablo. I mean, he only owned it for 5 years.
Why don't you start adding personalised kick plates to your cars using a Dymotate machine?
I think I'm going to do that.
That Boxster, I think it would look really appropriate just to have Dymo labels on the sills.
In front, next to all the buttons on the dash, I look like a forgetful old person. Talking of which, actually, I did see some Dymo tape on dashboards at the Land's End trial because such is the build of a lot of these cars, and I don't want to sound like I'm mocking them, but there is a real pride in homegrown competition cars on the Land's End trial, and that's actually one of the reasons why I like it so much. I'm fascinated with it, and it's so impressive. But yeah, there's a lot of sort of done on a budget stuff, and this is not an event for aesthetically pleasing cars. Over form.
I was quite troubled by the number of Suzuki X90s that you sent me pictures of.
I think there were 11 competing in the Land's End, this 100th Land's End trial. And someone said to me that there's about 30 left in the whole of the UK. So pretty much they're all going to end up trialling if they're not already.
Is the appeal? Is it because they have good sort of off-road credentials because they're separate chassis, aren't they? But
yeah.
It's because they're quite light because they're only two seats.
Yeah, a narrow track for a 4x4, which isn't a 4x4. So, and that's the thing. I think it was... It's as close to a rugged 4x4 without breaking the rules. And it's worthless. So it ticks two really major boxes in the trialing world of, like, it's cheap.
Rugged and worthless.
Yeah, because there's a lot of... And again, I don't mean to kind of mock people. There's some kit cars which conquer all in the trialing world, but out of the trialing world... Nobody cares. Not even a scrap man will take it because it's largely glass fiber. So that's what makes it so cool. Like that Reliant Scimitar that's the wedgy 80s one.
SS1,
right? This one of the most successful trial cars.
Ah, yes. Now, at a Bicester Scramble last year or the year before, I saw an SS1 all done up in, I think it was in matte green paint, and it had a spare wheel on the bootlid, and it looked brilliant. And it hadn't really occurred to me that was a trials car.
That would be trials spec. All the way across the back, that'll be pure trials spec.
I realise that Rugged and Worthless sounds like one of the country bands on our new Mustang Country label, but... that's the conversation.
What's the name of the album? What was it? Swerving and Careless or something. What was it called? I can't remember what you called it, but it was really good.
So are you allowed to talk about... You're saving it for a video to your trials adventure.
My trials adventure is going to go out on three videos... where I introduced why on earth I decided to do it in a brand new Kia Picanto, aka the Cant, and then preparing it for the grueling event and then the event. So that'll be coming out in the not too distant future, off of the Low Blake show and all that.
A patron of ours called Jamie, he met you at the trials.
Did he?
Yeah.
What was he competing in?
He was in a Citroen AX.
Oh, yeah. I did meet him. They were number 241, and we were competitors 240. So we hung out with the AX boys quite a lot.
Yes. Do they call it the AX wound?
Well, I called it the axe wound. I think they called it... Yeah, because that's what we used to call them on Max Power.
Right. Jamie was asking how you got on. He sent us a message, and he... he said, we bent our wishbone, but the AX survived. Just one tyre fire.
Yeah, honestly, they didn't have any sump protection and that car survived. Mm. I don't know how that did that, although they have an immense ground clearance, those cars, anyway.
Okay. He said it was feeling very tired by the time we got to Blue Hills. Is that the finish point?
Blue Hills is the final and the hardest stage.
Okay. Apparently they ripped a tyre off. there. But
yes. Well,
now Jamie says they've already got a BMW K1200 RS engine swap in mind.
Well, yeah. You're going to put a flat 2 in it.
This should take us from 49 horsepower, brackets more like 25 horsepower now, lol, up to 128 for only 271 cc more, keeping us in class 1.
Well, there was a Citroen Ami 8.
What?
There was a Citroen Ami 8 competing. And I think, again, it was a very frilly-looking right-hand drive one. So I think it might have been a trials car or a hedge find. And that was running a BMW motorbike engine, I believe. And I think it did very, very well. And, of course, skinny tyres, high ground clearance, works very well. I sent you that picture of the Triumph TR7s. There were about four TR7s.
Really?
Yeah, there were four. God. And MGBs, but MGBs, like Overland spec, Safari spec MGBs. They looked really good. One of them had an immense amount of body filler in it.
Yeah. we never mentioned that. You were talking a few weeks ago about that Renault 12 you saw that had basically been iced with body filler.
You look like Paul Hollywood had got busy on it.
Yeah, but just like Mary Berry's done half a restoration job on it. But I sent you that picture of that Toyota Auris that I saw.
Yeah.
Where... It did just look like Mr. Kipling had done a sort of lazy 5-minute job on the side of it. I cannot work out what they were playing at.
Why would anybody do it? Why would you add body coloured paint when nothing's been prepped? You've just glooped on a load of old toss.
I was somewhere, I'm not entirely sure I was. I still, you know, I haven't lived down this part of the world for that long, and I still sometimes find myself in towns that I don't know the name of because I haven't been paying attention. And I was driving somewhere else, and I was just passing through this town, and in someone's front garden, there was a Corolla Estate, a recent one.
Yeah.
But I swear it must have rolled.
Oh, gosh.
It was absolutely wrecked, but it was just sort of parked in the front. I was like, why have you kept it? That must appears to be a written-off car that you've got there.
Oh, it's got to be drivetrain donor. Got to be.
Oh.
Did it have a parallelogram roof?
It looked like it might. I mean, the windows were out. You know, that sort of damage, and the side was incredibly scuffed. If I could have stopped and taken a picture, I would have done because it was amazing. Same as I was dropping my kids at Holiday Club last week, and it was all a bit hectic, and I didn't get a chance to take a picture of a Volkswagen Eos. You remember the hard roof?
Yeah,
the folding roof job based on the Golf with a visibly broken roof. And the side windows were halfway down, and there was a lot of plastic, like plastic bags, sort of taped. But then it has all got wet, and the tape was coming off over the side. So I presume that the windows were jammed down, and the roof was jammed slightly open. And it was an absolute state. And I wanted to take a picture of it, but I was trying to marshal my children across the road, so I didn't get a chance. But I was just like, oh God. The horrors of trying to keep that thing weathertight now.
Oh, I have it on good authority from the chaps at Car Hoods Northern who fixed my Boxster roof. Because I said to them, I said, my parents have got a cabrio, and my dad quite likes the hardtop cabrios, you know, the Eos, and the Ford did the Focus CC, didn't they? And then there's that Volvo C70. And the guy looked at me and he went, don't do it. And I went, why? He goes, because they never keep the water out. He said, it's impossible. He said, we have them in on a weekly basis. You can replace all the seals. You can spend 48 hours adjusting, readjusting, trying to get everything to fit as the factory tells you to. He said, it still will let water in somewhere. He said, that's why all the manufacturers went back to cloth roofs.
It's good that the car industry has been at this for well over 100 years, but there's still a bit of trial and error involving millions and billions of pounds to get things right. Maybe that's also where we are with touchscreens at the moment, but who knows? Anyway, we should bring this to a close.
Yeah. I feel like we've covered quite a lot of bases. Do you feel like this podcast, this particular one, has it been the right ratio of actual car chat, accordions, country music? I feel like we might have struck the balance.
If I feel like I'm sitting at the mixing desk of content, I would probably move the fader marked Eagle Quest down a little bit. But otherwise, I think, you know, we've covered a lot of ground, and that's fine.
I was going to set the listeners a challenge at the end of this podcast, actually, just quickly. It was going to be, everyone goes on about what three words.
Yes.
So can I just say, if you had to sum up Smith and Sniff in what three words, what would they be? And you, please,
do we want to poke that one?
Yeah,
wasp's nest.
Yeah, we do. And don't just put the Eagle Quest, because I've said that. don't do it. Don't do it, because that's done. That's done.
Please,
now.
No.
Please,
God, no. Right, let's wrap this up. Before we do, I have three things to tell you. They are, one, Johnny has a solo YouTube channel. It's called The Mistaken Bassist Show. She is erroneously hired as part of the rhythm section for a band, despite having no training in his chosen instruments. This week, he's in Preston as part of a UB40 tribute act, enraging the crowd at a wedding by playing all the wrong notes during Red Red Wine. If that's not to your taste, there's always the Late Break Show. Lots of excellent videos about cars and people who love them on there. What have we got coming up?
I was just thinking about how badly I could get the intro to Kingston Town on a bad sort of wind-powered keyboard. you know those ones which you start up and they've got a fan?
Yeah.
They're rubbish. this Sunday's Late Break Show that's just gone, because you're listening to this on Monday. it's actually, I drive a Renault 4 and a Renault 5.
Oh.
Off of the south of France and all that. And
lovely.
Yeah, and they've both been converted to electric, which might enrage some people, or if you're inquisitive and slightly progressive, you might watch it and go, oh, that sounds like an interesting prospect. So that's what I do. And more than anything, it was just a chance to drive an old Renault 4 and Renault 5 again, because I haven't driven either of those for ages. So I took, there's a company out there who do a complete bolt-in, government-approved kit, because in France and countries like that, it has to be the exact, I think, weight and power output as the original engine. Otherwise, they will not permit it to be converted.
Second thing I've got to tell you is that I have various books out. Boring Car... I think I'd have got better at this, but Boring Car Trivia 4... is the most recent one, available on Amazon as a paperback or an ebook, or you can buy the paperback from our merch shop, where you can also buy t-shirts, mugs, stickers, hats.
Yes. Yeah.
No
pies
or ties as yet.
No.
And the third thing I've got to tell you is that the city of Manchester is named after a breast-like hill.
Really?
Yeah. It's so they think that the name originates from the Brittonic mam, which means breast, in reference to a breast-like hill. And so Manchester means the town on the breast-like hill. Although some people claim it might be mamma, as in mother, and it's about a local river goddess. But I quite like the town on the breast-like hill version.
I quite like that as well. I think that's fantastic. Manchester.
Okay.
Well, okay.
Okay, let's all fall off our chairs into a piano and then shout, fuck! Goodbye.
Cheers, mate. Thanks, mate. Bye.
So you've enjoyed this podcast, but you've had a thought. Is there a way here today that you could show support? Well, you could join our Patreon. What wonders that it brings. Early shows and extra notes on that side of things. You could buy our merchandise with mugs and hats, but still no ties. One day we will make those pies, but in the meantime, guys, hey guys, like and subscribe, and maybe leave a nice review. Like and subscribe, we know you know just what to do. Like and subscribe, we don't want to take the piss. Like and subscribe. subscribe, but we were told to ask for this. Like and subscribe. Like and subscribe. Like and subscribe. Like and subscribe.
Still getting bollocking for not saying on that side of things enough. I feel like we've abandoned it. Yeah, people are upset. People are disappointed.
Well, we'll next week we'll do a show where that's all we say.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.